Okay, good morning. Today's daf mentions a topic that's very challenging to a lot of commentators because the Gemara seems to have a different understanding of anatomy than what we have been able to find through dissections. I just read a blog this morning. It's called Talmudology. That times of the Gemara, they didn't dissect bodies. So that the whole idea of dissecting a dead body to discover, what the parts look like, that only started in like the 1400s. The Gemara we know was written back in the 500s. But still a challenging Gemara, because the Gemara seems to talk about a part of anatomy that we don't see in bodies that we take apart. So, the context of our Gemara, we're on Daf Chav Dalet, the context of our Gemara is the lesson of Rav Chanina. Rav Chanina taught, we learned this at the very end of our learning yesterday, that there are two methods to determine or to resolve a situation of doubt in halacha. Let's say I have an object, I don't know where it came from, I don't know what its identity is. So one way to resolve the identity of the object is to look at where the object is close to, karov, to say it came from that which is close. Another way, and the paradigm of that, the ultimate source of that, is eglarufa. When we find a dead body in the road, it's the sages of the closest city who come and perform the service over the calf in the valley. And they make the declaration that, you know, in our city, this person was treated well. And then we have another way to determine the identity of an object, and that is rov, that's a majority. What are most of the objects? Most of the objects are of a certain type, so this object is probably from the majority. So Rav Chanina taught that when you have a conflict between rov, a proximity, that which is close, karov, a proximity, that which is close, versus rov, versus the majority, holchin achar harov, you follow the majority. So the Gemara has been discussing that and challenging that question, but that was Rav Chanina's lesson. Rov versus karov, I could identify an object based on saying that it came from the closest area, that would be one idea of the object, one identification, or I can say that it is from that which is the majority, which would give me a different identification. So, Rov versus Karov, we follow Rov. Do we have to call Chaim? Does anyone have his number? Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. What would be an example of where the majority trump the...
He thinks the majority always trumps.
But trumps what would be an example of that?
So, maybe we're about to see that.
Okay,
so Amar Abaye. Abaye said, that's where we were up to. Amar Abaye. Abaye said, Afanan, we too, Nami, Tanina. We also learned this in a Mishnah. This idea of Rav Chanina, that majority trumps proximity, is not just an idea of Rav Chanina. There's even a Mishnah that says it. What's the Mishnah? So that's why I photocopied this diagram from the art scroll in Nida on Daf Yud Zayin. So, we learned, Dam Shanimtsaba Prozdor, blood in the Prozdor, Sfeiko, even though you're not sure where it's from, Tame, the blood makes the woman Tame. Shechezkasa min amakar, because the presumption is that it comes from the source, from the Makor. V'yafa gav v'yika aliyah, even though you have the attic, the Mikarva, which is even closer. So you see that when you have that which is close versus that which is the majority, we follow the majority. So what's going on here? So look at this diagram. This seems to be the way Rashi explains this Mishnah. Rashi, if you look at this diagram, says that there in the language of the Mishnah, there were three terms. There was cheder, the room, prozdor, the hallway, and Aliyah, the attic. So it sounds like the prozdor would be what we call the vaginal canal. Okay, and the cheder, the room, is the womb itself. or what we call the uterus. So now what's this aliyah? Now in our anatomy, we don't have this, but because this Gemara said that the aliyah is closer to the prosdor than the cheder. The Rambam, in his commentary to the Mishnah in Nidah, the Rambam says that the aliyah is the fallopian tubes, the ovaries and the fallopian tubes. Now the problem is that the ovaries and the fallopian tubes, they lead into the uterus, they lead into the womb. So how could you say that they are closer to the vaginal canal? They're not. They're actually all the way up there, and they go into the womb. So that's why it looks like from Rashi that Rashi had a whole different understanding of the biology, and that according to Rashi, there's the womb, which leads to the vaginal canal, but even closer to the vaginal canal and closer to the exit, to the cervix, is actually this little, maybe it's a cyst of some sort, this aliyah, this cavity. So Rashi says, blood from the womb is nida blood. And if that blood comes out of the womb, the woman becomes tummy. Blood from the aliyah, blood from the cavity, is not nida blood. If that blood comes out, the woman is not tame, she's not impure. So what happens if there is an examination and we find blood over here in the vaginal canal? We just don't know where it came from. It may have come from, or actually find it over here. Let's say we find it right over here. So the blood is closest to the aliyah, closest to the upper cavity, which is not tame blood. On the other hand, most of the blood, the majority of the blood in the body is going to be over here in the womb, which has lots of blood. So the halacha is, if you're not sure, it is tameh. So that seems to indicate that we ignore proximity and instead we look at majority. And that's a proof to Rav Chanina. That's what the Gemara seems to be saying. So again, Amar Abaya, Abaya said, Afana Namitzinina. We also have a Mishnah like Rav Chanina that majority trumps proximity. Because the Mishnah said like this, Dam Shanim Tzaba Prozdor, blood that was found in the prosdor. The prosdor is the vaginal area, the vagina. So sfeiko tame, if we're not sure where it came from, we're not sure if this is blood from the uterus, which is tame, which makes her impure, or blood from this aliyah, from this attic, which would not make her impure, she is tame. Sheches kasom in amakar, because the presumption is that the blood came from the uterus. The afil gavan, even though that we have an attic, we have this, you know, other area which is closer, and probably the blood is from there. We don't say that the blood comes from that which is close. We say that the blood came from the majority.
I guess today it's all tame, right? Whenever there is blood.
No. If there is blood that, let's say, from a cyst, blood from a cyst that a woman finds.
Know that when they check the.
You'd have to have a medical exam.
Who goes through the medical exam? I mean, no, sometimes. Right. No. Am I wrong?
No. There are midwives or gynecologists that'll check, and if they find a wound or some other source of the blood, it's not something. It's not impure.
So, in the times of David HaMelech, when he used to do it himself personally, how did he take that into consideration? Or was it always just...
Well, in the times of David HaMelech, when he did it personally, they had a tradition even about different shades of blood, different shades of red. So he, you know, that may have also been
so
contributing.
That determined.
Yeah, I think that's what it was referring to over there, that he was, you know, he knew different colors of red. We assume that all red is a problem, but he had different colors of red. So again, what you have here is, we know that a woman who bleeds from her uterus, a woman who has uterine blood coming out from the uterus, is nida, and as a nida, she is ritually impure, she can't enter onto the temple mount, she can't touch truma, if she does, the truma has to be burnt, if she would enter the temple mount, it would be a violation that is a deserving of death from the hands of heaven, and she's also not allowed to be intimate with her husband, but yet there can be blood inside a woman's body that's not coming from the uterus, and there are certain anatomical structures, apparently, maybe only in some women, maybe in all women, there are anatomical structures that are closer to the vagina than the uterus. And yet blood found there, we don't say is, oh, from the permissible, it's from the closer area. We assume it's from the prohibited. So Amar Le Rabbah, Rabbah said, this is not really a good example or not good parallel to our discussion. Our discussion is a conflict between proximity, that which is close, versus majority. Here it's rove. Yes, we have the majority coming from the uterus, but it's and whereas the proximity is the aliyah, is the attic, but we have something else too. We have both the majority, umatsui, and that which is prevalent, ka'amut. In other words, rove umatsui lekalamanda amar. No one would disagree that on the one side you have that which is close, but on the other side you have that which is both the majority, both most of the blood around here is from the other side, as well as it's very likely that the blood of the other side dribbles out. And it's how likely is it to have blood coming from the attic? It's closer, that's true, but it's unlikely to produce blood in the vagina. You know, maybe let's take the idea that it's a cyst. Yeah, there could be a cyst that would produce blood, but it's unlikely. You could have a cyst closer to the vagina than the uterus is to the vagina. But it's just the blood from the uterus is very likely to come. So it's both that most of the blood is from the uterus and the blood of the uterus is likely to come out. So no one says when you have both majority and likelihood that you don't follow majority and likelihood. The Tani Reb Chiya, as we learned in a Braisa from Reb Chiya, if you have this case, Dama Nimtza Beprozdar, blood found through an internal exam in a woman inside her vagina. And we're not exactly sure where it came from. We don't know. She didn't have the feeling of her uterus dribbling blood out into the vagina. She just has blood there. So if we have blood here in this hallway, if this woman then walks into the Beis HaMikdash, Chayavin Alav Al Bias Mikdash. If she did it by mistake, she'd have to bring a karban. V'sarfin Alav, if she walked into the temple. V'sarfin Alav Asa Truma. If she touches Truma, we'd burn the Truma. Now, 1 second. That's taking a risk, right? We know there's a terrible sin to offer in the temple that which isn't a sacrifice. Chulin ba'azara, to bring a non-sacrifice into the temple is a terrible sin. We know that there is a mitzvah to preserve truma. We don't just burn truma. We're not allowed to destroy truma. Only when truma is certainly tame would we destroy it. So here we have blood that we found inside this woman in this hallway. It may have come from the attic, which would make it pure. It may have come from the uterus, which makes her impure. And we say we're so sure that she's impure, we're even going to burn truma because of it. We're even going to say that she can bring a carbon because of it. So you see that we're 100% sure. So why are we 100% sure? Must be this is not the case of Reb Chanina. Reb Chanina says when you have a conflict, two different ways to resolve a question. You could say that the identity of the object is from that which it's closest to, or the identity is from the majority. You follow the majority. This is more than that. This is, there's a conflict. There's the things that it's closest to, the attic. And then there is not just a majority plus a high likelihood. It's both that this is where most of the blood in the body is from, but besides the fact that most of the blood in this area is from the room, from the uterus, besides that, it's also that the blood of the uterus is the likely blood to come out. That's what we know of. We know of blood from the uterus. We don't even know what the aliyah is, let alone to think that it's likely to produce blood. So when you have a majority plus a likelihood, then certainly that's the side that wins over just proximity.
So they're going based on the rules of probability.
Maybe. Yeah, it sounds like that.
No, but we cannot go with halakha. We cannot go with two assumptions. We have to stick to one. If you give me two assumptions, there's no end to it.
Well, we'll see. We'll see about two soon. Amar Rava, Rava said, Shmami Nami Reb Chiya Tlas, from this halach of Reb Chiya, that he is so confident that blood found in the prozdor, in the hallway, makes her 100% tame, we learn three laws. Shmami Nami, we learn number one, the law of Rav Chanina, that Rov Vikarov, when you have two different ways of identifying something, one is the proximity, the Karov, the other is the Rov, the majority, Halecha Harov, you do follow majority. Shmamina, you also see a second law that Ruba Doraisa, the fact that you're following the majority is such a strong proof to the identity. It's like a biblical proof. You can even, you know, bring karbanos based on it. We can burn truma based on it. With Shmamina, number three, we see that majority alone is enough. You don't need two majorities. Shmamina or Reb Zeira. This is a proof to the idea of Reb Zeira. Reb Zeira said like this. If you have a town that has 9 kosher butcher shops and 1 non-kosher butcher shop. That's all the town has. There's one, string of shops. 9 of them are kosher. 1 is not. So Reb Zeira said, "Afal pi shetlasas medina neulos." Even though the doors to the town are locked, so we only have one majority to deal with. The 9 versus 1. We don't have the majority of the town plus the majority of most of the visitors to the town. We just have one majority. Then we rely on it, and the meat that you find out in the street is kosher. So Aisha, because when you talk about a woman, kidlasas medina neulos tamya, a woman's blood, when we try to figure out whether this blood is from the source, which would make it impure, or it's from the attic, which would make it pure, that's a situation of a town with locked doors. There's only one majority to deal with here. There's not multiple majorities. There's one majority. And even so, kazlina basaruba. We follow the majority. So now Rava is not following the last idea that Rava said. Ask the Gemara. Haravu dekama Ravu matsui lekalam adamar. I don't understand. Rava was the one who said that the case of a woman, when we have blood in her hallway, and we want to figure out, is the blood from her attic, which makes her pure, or the blood is from her source, her uterus, which makes her impure. So Rava said, that's not a good case that majority trumps proximity, because that's more than just majority. That's majority plus high likelihood, because that's the blood that usually comes out, plus that's where most of the blood is. So one second, if that's majority plus high likelihood, how could Rava turn around and say that this law is a proof to the idea of Rav Chanina, that we follow majority versus proximity? This is not following majority versus proximity. This is following majority and high likelihood versus proximity. So that's what the Gemara asks. HaRavu Dukamar, but Rava was the one who told us that Rav Umatsui Lekalamad Amar, that when you have majority plus likelihood, no one says that you follow proximity against it. So the Gemara says you have to say, Hadar Barava Meahi. Rava has recanted that statement. He took that back. He went back from that. He doesn't think that a woman's anatomy is majority plus likelihood versus proximity. He thinks that a woman's anatomy is majority versus proximity, and therefore, since we say that she is tamei, we're 100% sure she's tamei to the point of taking the risk of bringing animals into the Beit HaMikdash based on it and offering them on the altar, we see that Rav Chanina's rule is right. We follow majority and we don't follow proximity. So now the Gemara is going to challenge this. We just said that Rav Chanina taught us we follow majority to identify something. We don't follow proximity when we have a conflict between the two. Itmar, we learned. We know that as Jews, we're not allowed to drink non-Jewish wine. That's a rabbinic prohibition. The rabbi said all non-Jewish wine is not kosher. So if the wine was made by non-Jews, it's not kosher. We learned. Chavis shetzafa banahar. Let's say you're in a town, and there's a barrel of wine floating in the river. So now you don't know where this barrel's from. It doesn't have a label on it. Can you assume it's Jewish wine? Or can you assume, or are you supposed to assume it's non-Jewish wine and you're not allowed to eat it? So Amar Rav, so Rav said, Nimtzis keneged ir sheruba Yisrael. If you found this barrel in a river next to a town that's mostly Jewish, muteres, then you can assume that the wine came from that town. Since the majority in that town is Jewish, you can drink the wine. It's kosher wine. However, Kenegadir Sharuba Nachrim, if you find the barrel of wine next to the town that's mostly non-Jews, Asura. You're not allowed to eat it. So it sounds like Rav is following proximity. Shmuel Amar Shmuel said, Afilu Nimtzis Kenegadir Sharuba Yisrael, even if you find this barrel of wine next to a town which is mostly Jewish, remember, you're finding the barrel in the river, Asura. Good morning, good morning. It's not allowed. Why? Because Amar Mehai, the cross site. Maybe this barrel floated down from this big non-Jewish area.
Yeah.
How do you know, right? Maybe it floated from this big non-Jewish area. That's where it came from. So, Lema, presumably, Bid Rav Chanina Kamifli. That's the argument. They're arguing one accepts Rav Chanina and one rejects Rav Chanina. This latter view, the view of Shmuel that says that the barrel of wine found in the river should be presumed treif, is because he agrees with Reb Chanina. So since Reb Chanina says when you have a conflict between proximity and majority, you follow majority. Most barrels of wine in a place, let's say, like Bavel, like Iraq, most barrels of wine are going to be treif, because most of them are from the non-Jews. We're in exile. We're not the majority country. We're not the majority culture. We're not the majority nation. So most of the wine's not kosher. So when you have a wine barrel here, even though it's closer to the Jewish town, you have to assume it's from the non-Jews. Umar, whereas Rav, who said no, that if it's close to the Jewish town, it's permitted. It's because less than Reb Chanina. He disagrees with Reb Chanina, who says that when you have proximity versus majority, you follow majority. He says you follow proximity. So since this barrel is near the Jewish town, you can assume it's kosher. So Gemara says, lo, not necessarily. Maybe the Kuli Amis Reb Chanina. Everyone would normally agree with Reb Chanina that we follow majority versus proximity. So if we normally follow majority, why would a barrel that is unmarked in Bavel be kosher? It should be not kosher, because the majority of the people there aren't Jewish. No, Achabakam, if here's the argument is about the following. Mar Savar, Rav holds, Im Yisad Mahai Dakra Asa. If you're going to tell me that it comes from this town of mostly non-Jews, which is further up the river, Akuliub Shuri Avamatvale, all the bends of the river and the rocks in the river and the various, you know, turns of the river would have crushed the barrel. It would have broken. How did it get from all the way up there down to here? Therefore, if it's right over here near our Jewish town, must be it came from the Jewish town.
If you take the river...
One second. Umar Savar, whereas Shmuel holds, Harifa Dinahara Nakat Vasai. No, since most of the wine in the town, in the country is not Jewish, we assume this barrel that's unmarked is also not Jewish wine. You say, well, how could the non-Jewish wine have gotten to here? This is a Jewish area. If it came from upstream, it would have been crushed by the rocks in the river. Not necessarily. Maybe a certain patch of, you know, strong water grabbed it in the middle of the river and it took it all the way downstream. The water pulled it downstream and it took it, you know, past all the rocks and therefore it didn't break. Okay, question.
Yeah, if the river was taken out of this and it was just found by the river, or just in the middle of the town, then there wouldn't be a question at all. Right. Why bring the river? Because the river is the only thing that travels the barrel.
All right, that was the case. Good.
Yeah. Because otherwise, it would be like the butcher shop.
Yeah.
It would be majority.
Right.
Even Rabbi, if it's a kosher butcher shop, and you find the meat next door to the butcher.
Most.
So... most likely is the kosher meat right there, because the butcher is right there, the kosher butcher.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's one point, but there's also the majority.
This becomes proximity rather than...
But there's also majority issues, right? You have to look at the majority of the meat in the town. Okay, now a story. Hahu chatzba de kamra. There was a story with a barrel of wine. Dishtakach bepardisa de orla. That was found in a orchard, a vineyard of Arla. Shaya Ravina said you could drink it. Presumably it's because he follows Reb Chanina, that even though the proximity is a field of Orla, so if you say you follow the proximity, it's Orla, it's not kosher, but the majority is not Orla. So Mar says no, and he's following the majority. Mar says no, Shani Yasam, there it was different. Because if you say it's from the Orla vineyard, so then what happened? You're saying a guy stole it, and then he hid it where he stole it? That's not what's normal. So now this law is only true if what he found was wine in the vineyard. But if he found grapes in a vineyard, then yes, if the vineyard is Orla, you can't say, oh, let's assume that the grapes come from the rest of the world. No, maybe the grapes came from this vineyard, and he hid them in the vineyard, and therefore it's not kosher. Next case. And Ezekiel the Chamer, there were these, Ezekiel I think are
jugs,
but it's more like these flasks.
Leather bags.
That's correct, right? Leather, like these leather canteens, these leather bags. Yes, yes. Like, you know, like we have these plastic hot water bottles that used to have these leather... flasks that they used to fill with wine or alcohol, and they would drink from them. So these little bags of wine, d'shtakhan be'kufay, they were found amongst the grapevines in a Jewish vineyard. So Shemini Rava said the finder could drink them. So it must be he doesn't agree with Reb Chanina. Because if you say you don't care about proximity, you look more to majority. Most of the wine that's in our country in Babylonia is non-kosher wine. So the Gemara says, no, Shani Hasam, there it was different. Deruba deshfuchai Yisrael ninu. Most of the people who pour from the barrel into these little flasks are Jews. Jews are the ones. So when you have these little flasks, you know it's actually Jewish wine. So Hanimili Baravri. So now this would only be true when you have these flasks that actually are big flasks. I'm sorry. It's big sacks of leather. Avolzuchi, but if it's these small sacks of leather, so then Amar Miovdik Drachim Nafu. Then you could assume that it's non-Jewish wine, and that some traveler, you know, filled up his little thing with wine, and it fell from him, and therefore it's treif. If you have big flasks together with these small flasks, we won't assume that the small flasks are treif. Rather, we'll say probably that means it was mostly big flasks. But when you have these big bags of leather with wine on a donkey, so the weight might be a little bit off and the donkey might be tilting, so then they would add these small flasks to equal out the weight on the two sides of the donkey. So that means that these small flasks are not probably a traveler who had something in his pocket that dropped. It's probably something that was to equal out the weight. And so it was to equal out the weight. Who are the people that use these big containers for wine? Jews. That means it's Jewish wine, and that's why it is kosher. All right, that completes the discussion of proximity versus majority.
Hashgacha was a lot more lax back then. Right.
Sounds like it.
What I don't understand is, though, wouldn't it be more important for a third option is that in no case would it be kosher, because the risk is too great. Why would you consider either option, even in the woman or in the barrel?
That's interesting. We are confident when we follow the Torah's ways of how to resolve questions. Right, but it's the Torah way of how to resolve a question, so we're confident that we should follow that. The Pasuk said, Achrei Rabim Latos, follow the majority, so we follow it. Yeah, David, a question.
I'm sorry, I came late.
No, it's all good.
So, their rule is to follow the majority?
That's what Rav Chanina said, yeah, and we were struggling with this rule. When he says follow majority versus even proximity, did he always say it? That was what we were struggling with, exactly. But yeah, we follow majority. All right, new topic. Next Mishnah, Marchikin Asilim in Ha'ir. We've learned about all sorts of rules, things we have to keep away. We have to keep away the pigeons from my friend's field, that they not eat his field. I have to keep, let's say Rachamim owns a city. So I want to plant a tree, I have to keep my tree away from his city. Because the Gemara will explain, the land of Israel should look beautiful. And it would look ugly if there's a tree in front of his city. The nicest way to have a city is have these nice open areas and then the city. They have trees and blocking the city. It doesn't look nice. So marchikin asilim in a year, esim v'chamesh ama. A tree has to be away from a city 25 amas. Now if it's a big tree with lots of leaves and branches, let's say a charuv, a carob tree, a sycamore tree, chamishim ama, it's got to be 50 amas away from a city. Abba Shalom or Abba Shalom, so like this, kol ilan srak, any tree that doesn't produce fruit, chamishim ama, 50 ama away from the city. Now, im ha'ir kadma, if the city was first and then the tree was planted, kotzeitz, Rachman, who owns the city, can cut down the tree. Veino nosin dam, does have to pay for it. However, im ilan kadam, if the tree was there first and then he put up his city, kotzeitz, he can still cut down the tree. However, veino nosin dam, he has to pay for the tree that he cut down.
Suffix.
What's that?
In halacha, we can't do that.
This is about an Eretz Yisrael. Safek zekadam, safek zekadam. If we're not sure which was first, whether the tree was first or the city was first, kotzeitz, he can cut down the tree, but they don't know sedam, doesn't have to pay the money. So Gemara now asks, my time, what's the reason why trees have to be away from the city? Amar Ula explained, Mishum noi ha'ir, in order to keep the city beautiful. The city is more beautiful, it's more appealing to the eye, that when you come to the city, there's this flat, open area, maybe some grass, and you see a city. But to have all these trees, and then a city, that doesn't look nice. So the Gemara asks, why did the Mishnah say that you can't put a tree near the city? There's another reason. Typically, just figure it out for the following reason. We know that around the city they used to have yards, migrash. And the Mishnah says in Erechin, Ein osin sada migrash. If you have a field, you can't turn it into a yard. Velo migrash sada. You can't make the yard into a field. It's right near the city. You're supposed to have 1,000 amos that are a migrash. They're supposed to be completely clear. No seeds even, no buildings. And that's just to beautify the city. And then after that, 1,000 amos of the yard, then you have another area for fields and for vineyards. And the Mishnah says in Erechin, to keep Eretz Yisrael beautiful, you can't turn the yard into a planted area. So if I can't even plant seeds, I can't plant grass, certainly I can't plant trees. So I'll tell you what we needed our Mishnah for. Our Mishnah was necessarily Rabbi Elazar for Rabbi Elazar. The Amar, he holds, Osan Sada Mikrash or Mikrash Sada, you can make a field of grass into a yard. And you can make the yard into a field. That's true with grass. But with trees, not. To keep the city beautiful, you can't put up a tree. Now we can give a second answer. Even according to the Rabbanan, Da'am, you say, that the part of the outside of the city, which is a field, can't be turned into a yard, and that which is a yard, 1,000 amos, can't be made into a field. That means I can't put in seeds. Aval ilanos, but to put in trees, avdinan, I can do that, I would have thought. You could put in trees, because that's not making it into a sada yet. It's just some trees. It's still an open area. But nevertheless, even the trees can't be too close to the city. Mishum noy ha'ir, lo, it can't be too close to the city.
Rabbi,
what is that? Migrash? It's the Migrash ha'ir. There's supposed to be a yard around the city, an open area, which is 1,000 amos. And how do I know the shiny bin zarin li'ilanos, that we can make a distinction between seeds and trees? The Tanya, we have this in regards to the laws of Shabbos. We know that karfef, a large area, yosemi be'sasayim, more than two sa'a, shahukof l'dira, that was surrounded with walls for people to live within it. So, then it's a home, and people can walk and carry through and throughout those walls. However, if Nizra Rubov, most of that area was then planted, Hareu Kigina, now it's no longer a residence for us, and people can't carry within that area. However, Nitza Rubo, but if it was planted with trees, Hareu Kichatzer, it's still a courtyard, and you can carry. So you see that there's a difference between seeds and trees. If you put seeds in an area, it's no longer a residence. If you put trees, it's still a residence. So therefore, when the Torah says that there should be a migrash, there should be a yard around the city. So we said you can't ruin the migrash. Can't ruin the migrash just to put in seeds, because then it's not a residence. But to put in trees is not ruining the migrash. That's why we need our Mishnah. While you can put in trees into the migrash, you can't put it close to the city, because it ruins the beauty of the city. Then the Mishnah said, "V'mayir kadma, if the city was first, kotseitz, he can cut down the tree, the eino, no sein damin. And he doesn't have to pay for the tree." So the Gemara asks, Maish magabe bor, why in regards to when we have a tree damaging a well, the Katani where it said, kotseitz, the owner of the well can cut down his friend's tree, even osin damar, he has to pay for it. Maish nacha, why here in regards to a city, the Katani where it says, kotseitz, the people of the city can cut down the tree, they don't osin damar, they don't need to pay for it. So Rav Kahana explained like this, if you're going to say that the people of the city have to pay for cutting down the tree's never going to get cut down. Because kidra de beishutfi lo chamim v'lo karira. When you have partners that own a pot, the pot's never hot and the pot's never cold. Because everybody always says the other guy's going to take care of it. The other partner's going to take care of it. So it's never taken care of. So if you're going to say that the city will become beautiful when somebody from the city gets up and pays, each guy in the city is going to say the neighbor should pay, no, the other neighbor should pay, no one's going to pay, the city will stay ugly. So therefore, we want the city of Eretz Yisrael to be beautiful. We say you take down the tree and you don't need to pay. So Gemara says, "Amai Kusha, what was the question? Maybe there's a difference between a tree which damages a group versus a tree which damages a well, which only damages an individual. So when you damage a group, of course, it has to come down and you don't get paid for it. Whereas you damage an individual, then you get paid. Eliyitmar, so if we're going to say something to Rav Kahana, the lesson of Rav Kahana, a sefer itmar, was at the very end of the Mishnah. The end of the Mishnah said, "Ima ilan kadam, if the tree was first, kotzeitz v'nosin dam, you cut down the tree, but you do have to pay for it. Ay v'leimaluhu, but why can't the owner of the tree say, havli b'resha dami v'hadar ekutz, first give me the money that I know I'm due, because my tree was first, and then I'll cut it down. Rav Kahana answered, no, we don't wait for that. When you have a pot belonging to partners, lo chamim of lo krira, it's never hot enough, nor is it ever cold the way it should. If we're not sure which was first, you cut down the tree and you don't need to pay for it. Why is this different than a well? When we say if we don't know which was first, lo yakot, you can't cut down the tree. So the Gemara explains, awesome, when you have a tree versus a well, divade lavle mekutz kai. Even when a tree was definitely first, before the well, you can't cut down the tree. You can't cut down the tree, because if the tree was first before the well, you don't cut it down. Sveiko, I mean, we're not sure. Maybe the well was first, or maybe the tree was first. Lo amina lelekutz, we can't tell them you have to go cut. But hacha divade lemekutz kai. But here, where the tree was before the city, still, you'd cut down the tree. Just you'd get paid for cutting it down, but you have to cut it down. So, Sveiko Namis, when we're not sure, Amino Le Lekutz, we tell him to cut. And if it's in terms of the money, he's going to say, listen, but pay me for it. Then we say to him, listen, Amino Le Isi Rayev Shkol, bring a proof that your tree was before the city, then we'll pay you. We're not necessarily going to pay you because you can't prove that your tree was first, but that your tree should come down. Your tree should come down. If your tree was first, it should come down. If your tree was second, it should come down. So your tree definitely comes down when we're not sure what was first, the city or the tree.